Good evening, everyone. The meeting of the Ways and Means Committee will come to order. Clerk will note the roll. There is a quorum. Members, we have the minutes of yesterday, March 23rd, in front of us. Are there any corrections, additions, or changes to the minutes? Seeing none, is someone interested in moving the minutes? Representative Carlson moves approval of the minutes. Seeing no further discussion, all in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are approved. Members, the order of business tonight is the budget resolution. I think that by house rule, we can't go past midnight. I hope we're done by then, but one way or another, we certainly will be. There are a number of things in your packets, members, in terms of the budget resolution, the amendment, which is the delete all amendment, which is the House position for the majority caucus, and then a number of other amendments that primarily are, I believe, being offered by the minority. I'm going to, since it is a resolution instead of a bill, simply take it from up here at the chair position, as has, I believe, been done by past chairs. And with that, members, I'm going to get started, unless anyone's got any other questions about process or anything they want to bring up. Okay, members, I'm going to move the resolution, which is entitled CS-RES-01, which you will see is a blank resolution. And then I guess in order to get the resolution in the form that we want it in, I'd like to move the DE4 amendment. And I'd appreciate it if people just let that get added on to the resolution so that we can properly discuss it. Any discussion to the delete all amendment? Seeing none, all in favor of the DE4 amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. The DE4 amendment is adopted. Okay. Members, let me go ahead and walk through the budget resolution, and I would direct your attention to a couple of other things that are in the packets. There is a spreadsheet prepared by Mr. Marks that has got a number of columns in it. It's got 12-13 spending, 14-15 spending, the predicted base for 16-17, governor's recommendation, this House proposal, and changes from 14-15 and the base. And so I don't know if you want to follow along with that or just follow along with what I'm going to go through with in explaining the budget resolution that the DE4 amendment has been put on. But let me just walk through the resolution, starting with going to the top and page 1, line 3. You'll see the total amount of money that is being spent in one way or another is $42,581,425,000. Now, that includes a number of things such as tax cuts and other items that we'll be talking about, but this is basically the amount of money that we're keeping track of here. You'll find that also underneath total net spending on the spreadsheet. You'll note two things it does not include. Number one, on lines 1.5 through 1.6, I am proposing to increase the budget resolution by $100 million. And secondly, you'll note that there's $314,339,000 that we are leaving on the bottom line. This is something that's a little bit probably unusual that has maybe been done in this amount before. I believe that a couple years ago, maybe the number was $50 or $60 million when the Ways and Means Committee was under control of the Democratic Party. I guess I feel, why do we have this large number here? I guess I feel it's important to have some flexibility. I think it's important to see how things develop with the economy in the next month or two before we have to finally decide what our budget reserve should be. Maybe some more of this money would go toward that. I know that as we go through looking at the amount of spending for each particular committee, There's a lot of discussions. There are still some unknowns in some committees. I think particularly in the whole health and human services area, there are some issues in terms of exactly what course of action we'll take on some big issues. I know that the governor himself has been saying, well, what should we do about MNsure? Should we maybe try to put it together with some other program? Should we just go on to the federal exchange? What sort of things should happen? Should MNsure and Minnesota Care maybe be combined? There's a lot of uncertainty, I think, in potentially other committees as well, and this is a source of money that if we feel we need to spend more in a particular committee, we would have the option of having it available. Members, then moving on down the line to the other committees, underneath agriculture, we're proposing to spend $91 million, $162,000. We are increasing this committee budget by a little bit to account for some initiatives that we think would be helpful for our agriculture community. Underneath page 1, lines 10 through 11, we are proposing a capital investment provision that would allow for an $800 million bonding bill next year, but would not allow for a bonding bill this year. And members, if you do happen to look on the spreadsheet and wonder why it's down so much from the previous biennium, it is because, as you may remember, there was a very large cash capital projects bill last year. We're not proposing to cancel any projects in this particular appropriation, although I suppose that's something that the committee could change and do something with, but I'm not anticipating that. I don't know of anyone who's proposing that. There's just a difference there because of the fact that we had this large cash capital projects bill last year. We are proposing $16,866,550,000 for the education finance bill. And members, this is, if you look at the amount of money that was appropriated in 2014 and 15, not counting the money that was used to pay back the education shift, this is actually an increase of $1,060,000,000. This is a very significant increase, and I think that it's something that will be what we need for the education finance area. We are on page 1, line 13, proposing to go to $231 million for the environment bill. Page 1, line 14, we are proposing to go to $11,622,685,000 for the Health and Human Services bill. This is up $443 million from what was spent in 2014 and 2015. And members, I want to draw your attention to something we handed out, which is the consolidated fund statement that has only become available in the last day. If you look at the other side of it, where you've got actual estimated all funds uses, you'll see a couple of items that have been circled, which are Health and Human Services spending by year for all funds for 2014 and 15 and 2016 and 17. And you'll see that actually, per forecast right now, there's an estimated increase of $5.5 billion in Health and Human Services Committee in the forecast. That's not the governor's numbers. That's just what's in the forecast. It's a something in the order of a 18% or 19% increase. And members, that is one reason that we are trying to. I'm proposing that we try to trim some of the growth in this area. This has been a very growing area for many years, the budget pressure on which has affected a lot of other budgets, a lot of other committees. And members, you also, I think all of you were here when we had the hearing a couple months ago talking about medical assistance, where we had our nonpartisan legislative auditor here who told us that studies that the legislative auditor had done indicated that 17% of the people on our public health programs in Minnesota are either ineligible for those programs or are classified in the wrong programs. We looked at what some other states like Illinois had done to try to save money in this area, which is a huge growing area for all states. And coincidentally, even today, our nonpartisan legislative auditor released another report highlighting the eligibility problems that we've got in this and other public health care programs, as well as some eligibility programs in other human services programs that we didn't talk about at that hearing. Indications that in some cases up to 50% of the people surveyed were not eligible for, or there were questions about eligibility in those programs. And so I guess I can tell you that I do think there's a lot of money to be saved in this area, and that that's something that we really need to be looking at. We shouldn't be having people on programs if they're not eligible for them. Moving on to page 1, line 15, I'm proposing $2,946,000,000 for the Higher Education Finance Bill. I'd also call to members' attention the fact that there is something in the order of a $72 million surplus in the state grant program that has become available because of lower forecasted enrollment. And so in addition to the increase that we are proposing here, there's otherwise some additional funding that might be available there if the committee should choose to spend it on something else. I'm proposing on line 16, $330,900,000 for the Job Growth and Energy Affordability Bill. We don't have a general fund target for legacies, so we're not proposing anything there. Page 1, line 18, I'm proposing $2,081,450,000 for the Public Safety and Crime Prevention Bill. That's $108 million higher. Line 19, proposing $902,638,000 for the State Government Finance Bill. Line 20, allocating $5,626,120,000 for the tax bill. And as people who have been on this committee before know, there's quite a bit of flexibility within the tax bill about how they can spend that money. I guess it's my anticipation on this time that $2 billion of that would be set aside for tax relief, and that another $384 million is represented by the dedication of the sales tax on auto parts that was highlighted in the House Republican Transportation Initiative that was rolled out yesterday. And so while it has been in the past a general fund item, would now be a dedicated fund, would no longer be a general fund item, but then should be in the tax bill since it is a tax and the tax bill will have to deal with it. And finally, line 21, proposing $361,000,000, $36,000 for a transportation finance bill. That includes the $228 million from the surplus in fiscal year 15 that was highlighted in the transportation bill that was rolled out yesterday. So it's combining that $228 million from 15 rolled forward into the rest of the transportation bill, or excuse me, in the rest of the target. With that, members, I think that you know, we need to be concerned about the people that pay these taxes in Minnesota. If you look at the total amount of money that is being spent and you take off the $813 million that was paid off in education finance shifts during 2014 to 15, you have about a 4% increase in the budget from biennium to biennium, about $1.4 billion. With the shift included, it's about $650 million. That's in the area of what the average family is getting for pay increases, what average median family income is, and I think it's appropriate that we're not growing our government faster than what the average family's budget is growing. And so with that, members, I know we're in for a discussion tonight. I know that people have different views on this. That's my presentation of the proposal, and I would be open to questions or amendments. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, a question You referenced that within the tax target, you anticipated a certain level of tax relief, I think is the way you referred to it. Are there other areas in the budget where you're anticipating or giving instructions that you might expect outcomes from the various committees that don't appear in the budget resolution?
Representative Carlson, as I'm looking down through the list here, I guess I don't know that I would say there are any. As I mentioned, I think there is something in the range of hundreds of billions of dollars of savings available from these eligibility initiatives in the health and human services area, but I don't have a particular hard number on that that I'd highlight at this time. And so other than that, I guess I don't know that I have anything that is a sort of firm advice that has been given to the committees. As you know, the committees are able to take these targets and make their own decisions about how they should reach them. And that's my anticipation that while I have certainly my own ideas on some of them and probably will lobby chairs, as do all other members, the chairs are on their own to reach their targets.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman, I was only picking up on your comment about
that's
the
fair.
$2 billion that you anticipated there would be certain action with. Okay, thank you.
Yeah, and I wanted to mention that, Representative Carlson, because that whole tax area is an area that just because of the nature of the tax committee, it's a little bit harder when a person looks at the target to necessarily know what may be happening there than some of the other committees, since you've got a lot of revenues as well as spending in that committee. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, thank you. On line 1.10, the bonding or capital investment, you mentioned that that was for next year. Is there restrictive language to that as it sits here? How do we interpret that as being just for next year and not being able to be used this year?
Well, Representative Pawlowski, I guess that's a good point. I suppose that we could use the money that is otherwise allocated for the $800 million bonding bill in the base for next year. I don't know, Mr. Marks, if you can help me on that. Of course, the bonding bill would be a lot smaller if you did it this year.
Mr. Chair and Representative Pawlowski, I don't know exactly what the 800 number is for next year, but it leaves an $800 million bonding bill in the second year of the biennium costs very little in the current biennium, and most of the cost is pushed off in the future years. The cost of a $200 million bonding bill this year is $20,788,000 of the difference here. So it's conceivable that a bonding bill this year could be structured within it, but I think it would be a pretty small bonding bill.
Mr. Chair, that's my question, because I did not see the restrictive language. I saw the number, and you indicated that you wanted it for next year, but it doesn't quite read that way.
Representative Pawlowski, that's a good point. I guess, I have perhaps become attuned to the past practice of saying that we generally have a small bonding bill or no bonding bill during the odd-numbered years and a larger bonding bill during the even-numbered years. I know that that practice has changed a little bit in recent years, I guess. But there is nothing in there on that, and House rules do specify that you cannot, say, subcategorize these and say, well, a certain amount of this target is for this program or that program. I guess I'm not sure if we could add anything saying no bonding bill this year, but I think you're probably right that as it is written now, Representative Pawlowski, you probably could have a very small bonding bill this year.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just trying to piggyback on your flexibility, and I think there's flexibility there.
Yep. Other discussion? Representative Lencheski.
Mr. Chair, on that point of the bonding bill, so I was listening to Representative Kelly's presentation on his transportation plan, and he talked about of course, trunk highway bonding, but $1 billion in geo bonds. And so how is that going to happen if there's no bonding bill this year?
Well, Representative Lincheski, if you looked at the plan that was released yesterday, that was a 10-year plan with the $1 billion in geo bonding being spread over the next 10 years. The anticipation was that we'd be looking at, on average, $200 million in the regular large bonding bills in the even-numbered years. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's a little confusing to me because all sides, both parties, Governor, everybody has been saying, you know, this is such a critical need. I mean, why are we waiting? Why would the House Republican plan to do bonding from general obligation bonds for 10 years be on hold this year? If you could explain that.
Sure, Representative Lincheski. If Chair Kelly was here, he could probably explain it better than me, but I think there's probably a limit to just how much money MnDOT can spend in a single year. And if you look at what's happening here, we've got $228 million from the surplus in 2015. That is going to be spent underneath that bill. There's the $384 million of the sales tax on auto parts. There are the potential for trunk highway bonds. Right now, it's my understanding that the highway user trust fund revenues are such that even without any additional revenues, they can have $300 million more in trunk highway bonds. I know that there's something approaching $500 million in MnDOT reserve funds that are also able to be spent. The numbers I've seen are over the next 4 years. And so I was involved somewhat in talking about the transportation plan and looking at different options with it. And I guess as we got into it, we thought there was a limit on just how much money really could be spent in that very first year, and that then having a bonding bill in the second year wouldn't harm the amount of road projects getting done. Representative Lincheski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe it's a question for Representative Torkelson, since this is his, you know, really his area in bonding, but, you know, or you, either way. I mean, I hope we can learn more about that, because I have some bonding bills that Representative Torkelson knows about, and in transportation, not in transit, because I have some of those too. And these are just in my city. And they're not for the whole state, they're just in my city. And they alone are $250 million just for some projects in my city. So, and they're engineered when they're ready to go. So I'm not sure why we wouldn't be able to spend the money if we would use the money in bonding this year. And I have never served on the bonding committee, and I see the former bonding chairs in the room, and I see the current bonding chairs in the room. But my understanding is, to pass a bonding bill, you know, it takes a while after we adjourn. You usually need some lead time, so waiting till the end of next year to start bonding for transportation projects. I mean, that's not my proposal, to use geo bonds for transportation projects, but I'm just not understanding, with the $2 billion surplus, why we'd wait when we have a huge inventory of things that are ready to go.
Well, I guess, again, Representative Lincheski, if you started adding up the numbers, the $228 million from the 2015 surplus, the $384 million from the sales tax on auto parts dedication, that's $612 million. There's $300 million of trunk highway bonding that could be done right now without additional revenues. That, if you look at House rules, that doesn't go through the bonding committee. That's a transportation item. That could be done right now. That brings you up to $900 some million. I mentioned the roughly $500 million of reserves. So you're way over $1 billion of available funding for right away starting this year if we think that MnDOT can actually spend that much more, plus the other money that they, of course, already have. And I guess it was just our judgment that there was a limit to how much they could efficiently spend. Other questions? I'm sorry, did you want to ask
Chair,
Representative Torkelson?
I'm just curious what the bonding chair thinks about.
No, that's fine. I'm sorry. I didn't realize you wanted me to ask Representative Torkelson to yield. Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Lincheski. First, thank you for your kind invitations to visit your district sometime this summer, and we have every intention of doing that. That's certainly one of the reasons for not doing bonding this year. We as a committee have not had a chance to evaluate the projects all across this beautiful state of Minnesota, and I assure you, your request is not the only one. We look forward to doing that important work this summer and putting together a bonding bill we can all be proud of next year.
All right. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to return to a little bit to your discussion about health and human services and how fast it's growing. And I see that your targets cut about $1 billion out of HHS. And I understand from your little few comments there that you're hoping to get some big savings from finding people who are on our programs who are not eligible based on the figure that was cited in the auditor's report on eligibility. And I know that we do have some couple of bills going through the HHS committees that want to, I think one of them might be Representative Drazkowski's bill, in fact, to hire an outside vendor to do eligibility. But first of all, I want to just remind people, I should have probably checked the figure before coming to this committee, but that 17% indeed is really a catch-all figure. They are in no way saying that there are that 17% of the people on our Medicaid program don't belong there and that we could get 17% of savings or something of that nature. And I know you didn't say exactly that, but the implication is that there's some enormous savings there just for the picking. And the reason I bring this up now is that with the target that's so low for HHS, it really gives me, it makes me really think back to when the Republicans were in charge of the House and Senate a few years ago and what it was like to go through the budget process then. And I know you weren't here, Mr. Chair, but there was a lot of what we could call fictitious budgeting, that some fiscal notes were just kind of made up. They were kind of made up on a wish and a prayer. And what you said about the hoping to get savings from eligibility, I think we would all agree that if somebody isn't eligible for our programs, we don't want them on our programs. We want the money to be for people who are eligible and have the need, and we want to meet legitimate needs. But even if we were to institute some great new system and get, you know, ACE eligibility checkers, I don't think we're going to get that kind of savings in this budget without making up numbers. And that gives me great pause because, and I will be offering the amendment on the HHS line of the budget, and we'll discuss it more then. But I just kind of wanted to raise that now because I've seen it happen before, unfortunately, that sometimes we kind of put into the budget numbers that we hope will materialize, and then sometimes they don't. And in the last couple of years, the DFL had to buy back some cuts that were, you know, part of that fictitious budget. Some of the stuff did not come to fruition. And it's kind of it's a difficult thing when we hold out hope for people. And, you know, we're holding out a lot of hope right now in the HHS budget. I mean, members are just seeing lots and lots of bills. And I would hate to see us have to come back and clean up another mess like we did the last time, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Liebling, let me just say a few things to that. First of all, you know, the forecast is that we're going to spend $10 billion in the next biennium on medical assistance. It is the single largest, most expensive program that we have. And I think you were here for the hearing we had on it that said that in that program alone, we were projecting to have an increase of $1.4 billion just on that one line item, which was more than everything else put together. And I understand that, yes, it's not that there are 17% of the people that are on the program that are ineligible. You're correct. I didn't say that. I remember the legislative auditor in his exhaustive report talking about how this was people that were misclassified. In many cases, they were ineligible. In some cases, they were on a worse program for them than they could have been, and they you know, should have been on medical assistance when perhaps they were only on MnSure. But if you do go through the report in detail, as I've done, you'll see that at least his sampling is that 9% of the people on medical assistance, of those he sampled, were not eligible for it. And there were, of course, others that weren't eligible on other programs. Now, we're not going to claim $900 million in savings, 9% of $10 billion. You know, obviously, there would have to be some allowance for error. There has to be some allowance for getting the program started and so on and so forth. But as we also saw, you know, other states have made efforts to do this. Other states like Illinois have saved hundreds of millions of dollars. And so I really think, and if you look at his new report that he issued today, it's just further evidence that we are spending a lot of money on people that are not eligible for our program. So I do think that there are significant savings here, Representative Liebling.
Well, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Representative Liebling.
I'm sure there are. And, in fact, I have a bill as well that I think would help us save a lot of money in this same area. And I think there are ways that we can do that. But sometimes it takes money to save money, too. And even these bills that require hiring an outside auditor or an outside, in fact, my bill requires hiring some people to do some deep auditing in HHS to make sure that our money that's going to the HMOs is actually being spent where they say it is, because the rate setting is, we're spending a lot of our money there, and I do agree. I'm just concerned that when we do put the budgets together with this very low target, that the numbers be solid numbers and not numbers that are just built on a wish and a prayer. And that's just kind of my comment right now, Mr. Chair.
Sure, and I appreciate that. And, you know, Representative Liebling, I'd like to learn more about your idea. We're certainly open to all ideas for saving money in this area. That is a significant area. And I did misspeak before. One other thing in terms of, I believe it was Representative Carlson asked me, or maybe it was Representative Lincheski, are there any other specific programs or initiatives that you do expect to have as part of these targets? I guess the one other one I did fail to identify is a long-term care initiative that we have been talking about on the House Republican side that we do intend to have included in this area. Representative Liebling.
And Mr. Chair, thank you for that. I'm glad to hear that. Which one are we talking about?
Representative Liebling, the Schumacher bill, I believe it's House File 316.
Correct. Thank you.
All right. Other questions? All right. Does anyone want to offer any amendments?
Well, Mr. Chairman, you do have the amendments. I don't know what order you wanted to take them up. I turned them into Mr. Stone. And you have them in the packet. We can take them in the order that they're in the packet, or...
No, let's just, we'll take
whatever,
the order.
Whatever, whatever you'd like. We weren't necessarily going to organize the amendments in a particular order. It's just that we want to make sure that they're all before us. One thing I do want to point out, however, is that when we do get to the final vote after our amendments are adopted, right, that we have a roll call.
Well, Representative Carlson, if all your amendments would be adopted, would you still want a roll call?
Well, I just want to have a positive feeling as we leave.
All right.
So there will be a roll call. At any rate, I do want to request a roll call on the final vote while I'm thinking about it. And then whatever order you want to take up the amendments is fine from the minority perspective.
All right. And I'm sorry. Maybe I have a little bit of a breakdown in communication there.
There is one request I do have. Representative Murphy, who will be moving the education amendment, I think I mentioned to you, she's in the Pension Commission meeting, and we need to notify her, and maybe when she gets here, when we notify her, if we could be sure to take that amendment so she can go back to the Pension Commission.
Sure, Representative Carlson, that's fine, and I guess we'll just go through and take them in order then. That seems to be the easiest thing. Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a question, and I talked to Representative Carlson before we came in. I'm actually having an amendment drafted right now, so in addition to the packet, I mean, it's drafted and we're getting copies made at the moment, but you know, I just want to be clear. So we're working off the DE-4.
Yes.
And that is the majority's targets, and you know, looking at this sheet, so you know, I just want to be clear. So when you go back to 12 and 13, the total spending in the state was 35.3, and then in the 14-15 biennium, the now minority increased the spending to 39.3, you know, with great criticism, of course. And the new target will be an increase to 42.581425. Is that correct?
I'm sorry. Can you say that last statement?
The new House target will go from 35.3 in 12 and 13 to 39.3 in 14-15 to 42.581 in 16 and 17. Is that correct?
Well, Representative Lincheski, I guess it depends on how you define it. I guess I'd make two points. First of all, the $39.3 billion does include the education shift payback. Some people feel that that's sort of like a debt that was being paid and shouldn't necessarily be in that number for measuring what the increase was. Some people feel that, well, it's just all cash basis accounting and it should be there. But then when you talk about the House proposal of the 42,581, that is really the total amount of resources that is available. That includes the tax cut proposal, that includes the transportation proposal. If you look at what is Mr. Marks preparing this, has brought forward the 2015 surplus money that was in House File 4 and that had $28 million added to it for the transportation bill into this. If you take out those proposed tax cut numbers, if you take out the general fund number of the auto parts sales tax, it's now becoming a special fund. If you consider this $228 million from 2015, you're at more like $39.949 million.
Well,
Representative Lynch.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate that and understand that. And so even as you went through that calculation, it's still an increase in state spending, even if you want to hold those items out. And I know you weren't here, but I just want to tell you that the 39.3 number included all those things you said. There were lots of tax cuts in that number. As you mentioned, we paid back the school shift. Yet the rhetoric around that, and in fact, the tax incidence report, as you now serve on taxes, know that 90% of Minnesotans received effective tax rate cuts. And at the time, you know, 39.3 was, you weren't here. We were making those identical arguments you just made, that it actually was a big piece of it was paying back the school shift and giving tax cuts to most Minnesotans. Yet we were called to the table on that, so it just was interesting to watch you walk through the same arguments we made, yet the number is 42.5, and even if you take them out, you're still going above the 39.3. So, for folks who maybe have never sat on Ways and Means before, I just want to clarify that it's instructive to hear the identical arguments, but thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, Representative Chesky can only say that people often ask me, what's it like returning after being gone for 8 years? What do you notice that's different? And one thing I do notice is I don't remember ever spending most of my time debating what we did last year. And there's a lot of discussion about what happened the last 2 years, and I wasn't here for the last 2 years, and there are, I think, 25 other people that weren't here for the last 2 years. And for all of us, we're kind of watching the debate. But I know there were strongly held views, or there are strongly held views. I guess there must have been big debates. But this is my proposal. This is this year, and I guess I hope that we can talk about what we should be doing going forward as opposed to going backward. Representative Carlson.
Chairman, you made reference to the school shift, and I'm as to whether that should be calculated in those numbers or not. And, you know, that was a commitment to pay the school districts that amount of money. And it was a delayed payment. So what would be your line of reasoning that that shouldn't be included once it's been paid? Should that not be in the base?
Well, Representative Carlson, I certainly think that it should have been paid. And as you'll remember, you and I were authors on a bill some years ago that set up the automatic repayment mechanism by which this, by and large, was repaid. I guess I mention it because there are, I think, two equally valid ways of looking at it that people should be aware of. On one hand, you can look at it and say, you know, on a cash basis, which is the way the state does its accounting, in 2014 to 15, we're projected to spend roughly $15.8 billion for education, plus another $812 million for paying off the shift. But in another way, I think you can look and say, well, the shift was really a debt that needed to be paid, and if you look at what money the school districts had available for their operations, it was really the $15,807,000,000, and that when you measure how much new money they're getting, you should be measuring it off of that as opposed to the shift, which was just a debt being repaid to them that in some cases they then had to repay to someone else that they had to borrow money from.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I just have a different viewpoint on that because we did make a commitment to the school districts. That was the level at which we funded them, and then we simply delayed the payment. And so I would argue that that should be included in their base, but you have a different point of view than what I do, but... once we made that commitment that they would be funded at a given level and simply delayed the payment to balance the state budget, to say that that's not a valid consideration to include it in their base, I think is, in, at least in my view, questionable.
But well, Representative Carlson, I think you maybe, maybe state it clearly enough. I think that you and I are actually in agreement that this is something that absolutely had to be repaid. It's just a question of when you're measuring the increase in education funding, do you measure it off of the money that schools received, including this shift, which in many cases they then had to pay off to someone else, or do you just measure it off of the money they received not including the shift? And I think, you know, reasonable arguments can be made both ways. I think people just need to be aware of the issue.
Yeah, well, Mr. Chairman,
Representative Carlson,
you know, I wonder if we asked on the bonding if the bonding chair would comment, and perhaps Representative Loon, who chairs K-12 Finance, might comment on our discussion here. See what her thoughts are.
Would you like to comment on Representative Carlson's comments?
Well, I really don't have anything to add to that other than, you know, Mr. Chair, I think you raised a valid point. You could look at it either way, and I think the important thing is that, you know, that we have no shift. The schools are made whole. All of the money was paid back, and so that's, I think that's the important thing.
And Representative Carlson, did you want Representative Torkelson to...
No, I wonder if... Well, no, Representative Torkelson was asked earlier about the capital investment. If Representative Loon would yield, she said you could look at it either way. The question I'd like to pose then is which way would she like to look at the handling of the shift in the base funding?
Well, Representative Loon.
K-12 Finance Chair.
Representative Loon, did you want to comment at all to that? All right.
She said no. Wouldn't you?
Well, should we? I see Representative Murphy is here, and I know that she's got another commitment that's also going on. Representative Murphy, would you like to move the A-17 amendment?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Murphy moves the A-17 amendment. Discussion to the amendment, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This amendment would bring the funding for education up to the governor's recommendations. In committee, in Education Finance Committee, almost every person or groups of people or representative people that have appeared before us have anticipated that there would be increases in spending for education. And they have very good plans of how, if they were to get their ask, we would be going forward and improving education of children from the earliest age to through the 12th grade kind of opportunities for students. And I think that the governor's recommendations, although they weren't what I had hoped that they would be, they were more realistic than the amounts that are in DE4. There are 16,607 more real kids in Minnesota schools in 2015 that have to be accounted for and paid for in 2016, 2017, 2018, and so forth going forward. I don't think that the amounts that are in DE4 would be able to bring them up to equity, fairness within the system or within the way that the amount of money that we are spending today. We're downstairs discussing pensions, and there's some changes that were being discussed, and the school board people before the meeting said, Mary, you can't make changes that would cost the schools. Because if we do have changes, more contributions, that money would have to come out of the per pupil unit, off the formula. And we're just emerging into a stable budget. And I think that the people expect of the legislature, the people expect that the legislature in this growing economy will address the needs of our children from early childhood through graduation as best as we can. And I think the governor's figures are much more realistic.
Well, thank you, Representative Murphy. I guess what I would just say in reply to that is that a couple things. First of all, over the last 2 years, there's been some very significant increases put into statute for education financing, increases of several hundred dollars per student on the formula. That's one reason that the forecasted base has grown so much from 2014 to 16-17, and that when they do those forecasts, they actually include enrollment changes. And so the 16,000 some students that you mentioned, those additional students are in that forecast base. We are proposing to increase spending about $157 million beyond that forecast base. That is a total increase of over $1 billion, not including the shift debt payment that we talked about earlier. And I guess I think that if you look at that personally, I guess it's my judgment that that is adequate for the K-12, E-12 area. Okay. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I beg to differ. And I would have mentioned the previous 2 years, but when I walked in, you were talking about your past and that you weren't here, and that, so I took that as something that I won't bring that up. And so I went forth on this other track.
Well, thank you, Representative Murphy. I guess I thought it was appropriate to bring it up in this case, but that's fine. Representative Murphy asked for a roll call. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If Representative Loon would yield for a question.
It's Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Loon, one of the items that was talked about a lot when we were talking about the teacher layoff bill was closing the achievement gap. Do you believe that you have adequate resources to ensure that Minnesota is closing that achievement gap? One of my school districts is the school district that is number one in closing that achievement gap. We had a 28% growth in graduation rates among African-American students. And my question is, do you believe this target will adequately allow you to close that achievement gap and put adequate measures in to make sure that people are doing what they need to do to make sure all of our students are graduating?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hillstrom. Well, I think, you know, we are still hearing a number of proposals in the Education Finance Committee, and we've heard some really good ideas. We had a day or two devoted to the achievement gap, and we had a variety of schools that came in and presented, and perhaps one of them was yours. I don't know which district you're referencing, but we did hear some great testimony on how schools are beating the odds and how they are turning around some of their numbers and making great strides towards populations of Minnesota students who have fallen into the achievement gap. So, I think we're going to make a valiant effort with the budget target we've been given to make very wise investments in that do the best things that we can for Minnesota students. When we talk about the achievement gap, there's a lot of proposals out there, everything from early childhood to extended day programs to measures in between there. And so I think what we're going to have to do is take a look at how we can best make investments. And and along with that, it's not only the money, but also giving districts some of the flexibility that they need to do the best they can for their students. One of the other proposals that we heard was compensatory funding, which goes to districts according to how many children that they have that fall into the free and reduced price lunch category. And a lot of districts are finding that the strictures of that funding that has to stay at a particular site and used in very specific ways isn't helping them meet the needs of all of their students, especially in areas like early or English language learner programs and that. So I'm hoping that we can take these funds, use them wisely, and combine them with some good policies that will give districts the ability that they need to meet the students that they have.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Loon, well, my district benefits tremendously from compensatory funding. So if all you're going to do is shift it around and give our money to somebody else, that concerns me very much. The second question that I have for you, Representative Loon, is it was announced, I believe today, I saw in the paper, that 160 staff people will be laid off from the Minneapolis School District. Do you believe that the budget target that you are receiving will give you adequate funds to, one, deal with the teacher shortage that we currently have? I'm seeing a number of proposals to make it easier for people from other states to become teachers in Minnesota. But do you believe that you have an adequate target here to deal with that issue? And do you believe that you have an adequate target to stop the bleeding in our school districts and stop the resulting layoffs that are currently happening in our schools?
Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hillstrom. Well, the Minneapolis School District, their layoffs that they're doing is from their administrative positions. And I did have a good meeting with the acting superintendent of Minneapolis, who told me that this was part of their plan, had been in their works for a long time. They feel like they are too top-heavy in administrative, and they're going to push district or positions out into the schools. And I also heard in a news report on it that they are planning to hire 350 new teachers for this fall. So I think that's more a reflection of Minneapolis kind of reordering their own priorities and where they feel their staffing needs are best. And those are the kind of things that I think that we expect schools to do to, again, better focus their resources in the classroom.
Well, thank you. Seeing no other further discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the A-17 amendment.
Knobloch?
No.
Albright?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Carlson?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dean?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Draskowski?
No.
Garofalo? Gunther?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Yes.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Hahn?
Yes.
Lincheski?
Yes.
Liebling?
Yes.
Loon?
No.
Mahoney?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Mernis?
No.
Pulowski?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Turkelson?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
There being 11 ayes and 15 nays. Well, just a minute. I got to double check this.
16.
Excuse me. There being 11 ayes and 16 nays, the A-17 amendment is not adopted. Members, I guess the next amendment in the packet is the A-12 amendment. Did someone want to move the A-12 amendment? Representative Pulowski.
Mr. Chair, this amendment would allow at the governor's numbers the freezing of tuition for undergraduates at the University of Minnesota in Minsky. So it would give that flexibility to the target.
Representative Pulowski, I'm wondering, Representative Pulowski, if I can ask you a question on the whole tuition freeze issue. Could you talk a little bit of, you've been in this area for a long time. Some people have told me that the tuition freeze is problematic for some institutions. Of course, as the parent of two college students, I kind of like the tuition freeze myself. But can you talk about some of the policy issues revolving around the tuition freeze and the advantages and disadvantages?
Mr. Chair, over the era of the recession, Minnesota higher education was cut by record amounts, just not record amounts inside the state. The University of Minnesota was cut by a record amount nationally for a university of its size and caliber. Subsequently, those record cuts led to record tuition increases. These happened year after year after year. The now consequence is record debt. Students in Minnesota are fourth and fifth in the amount of debt that they carry and the number of students that take on debt. So we are making a reinvestment in higher education. We cut higher ed, we use that money over a period of time to balance the budget, and now we have the unfortunate situation where students are carrying the debt for a decade or more, and we're pricing students out of higher education. The talent that we need, the investment that we need in both brain power, and you've already heard here about achievement gap, we need to make higher education accessible and affordable. And this is one way of our saying, we took it away, now we're going to put it back.
Well, Representative Pulowski, I guess I'd respectfully oppose your amendment. There is going to be a $103 million increase in higher education from 2014-15 to the current biennium if the proposal that I'm bringing forward here is adopted. And as I mentioned earlier, and as I'm sure you know, there's a very significant surplus in the private grant program right now, a forecasted surplus of some $72 million. And I don't recall if you were in the committee when we had Minsky and the U of M here, but we also, in having them here, found that the U of M's funding from the state of Minnesota is over twice the amount per student as that of Minsky. And so I guess when I look at how much money the university is getting per student, compare it to Minsky, look at the total amount that we are putting in here in terms of an additional $103 million, plus the $72 million of surplus that's available. I guess it's my judgment that that is sufficient funds. Representative
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask for a roll call. I would counter with this. It was the University of Minnesota in August of 2012 that first made the proposal of freezing tuition. They began to see that you cannot simply go with the model that had happened prior to the recession of high tuition, high aid. There was a limit. We have seen, similarly, in the private colleges, another anomaly happening, too. We have seen setbacks, resets of tuition as much as $10,000 per student to lower that tuition so accessibility would be there. So, Mr. Chair, I would disagree with you. I think higher education is expensive. We've probably priced it to the point where we're pricing an entire generation of students out of it. We took the money. We spent it to balance the budget. Now it's time that we make an investment. And that's what this amendment's all about.
Representative Wagenius. Well, I guess I thought I had you as someone that wanted to speak. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just as a little follow-up, you know, I would argue that neither system is fully funded. We've had sometimes the same debate within the Minsky system. Tech colleges, because of the need for equipment and the smaller class sizes, are often more expensive than other two-year counterparts. So you really have to look at the mission of a given institution. The University of Minnesota has some very expensive graduate programs. Graduate programs have been appropriately growing in the Minsky system, and they are generally more expensive. I remember when we had discussion a few years ago, the different funding level per student with St. Cloud in your home area and Mankato. And when we looked into it at that point in time, and it may have changed in recent years, but Mankato had more graduate programs than St. Cloud. St. Cloud had a very large undergraduate program. My only point is that I think we've been, as Representative Pawlowski pointed out, underfunding higher education generally, whether it's the University of Minnesota or Minsky. But when we look at, you know, with the university, there's the graduate programs that I mentioned, the research mission, as well as a very large extension program. Not that those other programs don't exist in Minsky as well, but I think really the debate should be how we can appropriately fund Minsky and appropriately fund the University of Minnesota.
Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, one other point. Prior to the recession, we were 25th in the nation in tuition at the two-year institutions. We're now second or third, depending on how you want to calculate it. We're going to a two-year institution prior to the recession and almost no debt. Now the average is about $9,000 per student at a two-year institution, whether you're getting a certificate or an associate degree or whatever it is. It's time to make an investment. We made the investment last session. I think we need to continue it until balance is restored and access and affordability comes to higher education.
Representative Lubley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, as everybody knows, this is a year in which we have almost a $2 billion budget surplus. And I think Representative Pawlowski's made a very good case and a very good explanation of what we've been doing to our young people. And the one thing I would take issue with him a little bit is he said, we cut education, we cut higher education. No, we didn't. The GOP did that when the GOP was in charge, which is, I think, what he probably means to say and is probably more polite than I am. But I think that this is a very serious issue. I think it really goes to an issue of intergenerational fairness. Because when people in my parents' generation and maybe your parents' generation were funding higher education, they funded it to a much higher degree so that I and many of my contemporaries were able to get a public education that we could afford and come out without a lot of debt. And so in this year, when we have a $2 billion budget surplus, to be underfunding our public institutions and not allowing them to freeze tuition to help our students have a fighting chance to get their education without mountains of debt, I think it's just awful. And also, I don't know what Representative Davids is planning to put in his tax bill, but some of the proposals that have been going through this legislature, like the Social Security tax exemption, are things that really shift the tax burden from older people to younger people. And Mr. Chair, you just mentioned that this in the HHS bill that your caucus would be planning to fund House File 316, Representative Schumacher's nursing homes bill, which I absolutely support that. But let's not forget, as we put a lot of funding toward older people and give tax breaks to older people, that we shouldn't let the mountains of debt continue to fall on our younger generation, because these are the people that have to carry these expenses. And they need to be prepared to do that. They need to have the best preparation we can give them. We need to listen to our state economist when she tells us that what we need to do for this state is invest in productivity. And I don't know about you, but to me that means helping people get a higher education. And if they come out with mountains of debt, it puts a damper on our whole economy and is going to put a damper on the economy for years to come. So I fully support this amendment. I think it is absolutely foolish to do otherwise.
All right. The clerk will take the roll on the A-12 amendment.
Not Black.
No.
Albright. Anderson.
No.
Carlson.
Aye.
Cornish.
No.
Davids.
No.
Dean.
No.
Detmer.
No.
Draskowski.
No.
Garofalo.
No.
Gunther.
No.
Hackbarth.
No.
Hamilton. Hellstrom.
Aye.
Hornstein.
Yes.
Kahn.
Yes.
Franceschi.
Yes.
Liebling.
Yes.
Loon.
No.
Mahoney.
Aye.
McNamara.
No.
Murphy.
Yes.
Nernes.
No.
Pulowski.
Yes.
Pavi.
Yes.
Turkelson.
No.
Erdahl.
No.
Wagenius.
Yes.
There being 11 ayes and 16 nays, the A-12 amendment is not adopted. The next amendment we've got in the packet is the A-13 amendment. Would someone like to offer the A-13? Representative Mahoney offers the A-13 amendment. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, I'll start out by saying, can I get a roll call on this?
Sure. Representative Mahoney requests a roll call.
And Mr. Chair, to kind of play off of what my colleague Representative Liebling was saying, this is a really the budget target that you put here really puts a really nice damper on the economy. I'm impressed at this particular point. I think it's almost a 20% cut from your target is a 20% cut from what the previous biennium was, and I understand you weren't here. Sometimes, you know, it's good to be gone. You don't get blamed as much. We spent, for the last biennium, we spent $433 million and probably produced the best economy. Well, actually, we are the best economy right now in the whole Midwest. Michigan, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Iowa, the Dakotas, Bakken oil fields is going down the toilet for a while. So it'll be back. So we won't have number one for a while. We'll only have it for a short period of time. With this target, I mean, you know, 20% less, you're eliminating all sorts of one-time spending, which, you know, that's a choice. I get that. That's a choice. But some of the one-time spending that we did last year was broadband. Well, maybe we're not going to do broadband this year. There was a significant amount of workforce, and maybe we won't do workforce training this year. But that might upset a few people in greater Minnesota. We did a lot of business development issues, like the BDPI, Business Development Infrastructure Grants. That going through Representative Gunther's committee, Representative Garofalo's committee, I have seen promise after promise and browbeating on certain people about how much that is very, very important. And I think there's been bills for $20 million and $30 million. And I don't think they've hit the $40 million yet. Workforce housing? I'm not sure how you do workforce housing with this particular target. Literally, I don't see how you do it. Unless you go at least to the governor's numbers. Brownfield cleanup. I hope everyone realizes that there's probably 7 or 8,000 brownfields in the state that need to be cleaned up. And this year there is a proposal to spend about $28 million. And maybe that's a little high, but I'd love to get those back in the tax rolls. That would be really good for greater Minnesota and urban Minnesota and all the cities in between. I just went through Representative Gunther's committee and I came up with $130 million that have been proposed by just my colleagues on the other side of the aisle. So this is really just trying to get it back to the governor's number. And Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, I don't know how you fund the best tool that DEED has with this budget. I mean, you don't get to do Minnesota Investment Fund. You don't get to do the Job Creation Fund. Both of those that truly, truly work very well in many districts. And just to explain a few, Representative Albright's district had a lot of money put into it from those two. Your district, Mr. Chair, had a ton of money put into that from the Job Creation Fund. Representative Anderson's, a couple others here. Unfortunately, the chair's district from last year got very, very little. Almost nothing. I don't quite understand that. But in any event, Mr. Chair, this is a easy amendment to vote for. It gets us, continues on, not as the level that I would like, but it continues to push our economy forward by helping small businesses grow from 5 employees to 10, or to 20, or to 30. It trains our workers. I mean, if we're going to stiff them on getting a certificate and coming out with massive amounts of debt, we should at least let them try to help them get a good job. I could go on. I really do like jobs and talking about the economy, but I think I've kind of put my point out there, and I'll stand for questions.
Sure. Well, Representative Mahoney, thank you. You know, we could have a really interesting debate here about the extent to which government funding and the Jobs Committee affects the economy in Minnesota and grows the economy, and I think that there is, some effect. But rather than getting into the issue of to the extent to which government creates jobs and past spending and the Jobs Committee has helped create the economy that we've got, or to the extent that it's other things, I guess I would simply observe that the economy in Minnesota is much better than it was some years ago. And for whatever reason people want to assign, the economy is better, unemployment is down. I don't know that we need to be spending the kind of money that we perhaps needed to spend here a few years ago, given the state of the economy. And looking at that, it seemed to me that this was an amount of money that would work for the departments that are in here and for our state. And so with consultation with other people, including Representative Garofalo, we came up with the number that I've got proposed here. Representative Mahoney.
Well, Mr. Chair, and Representative Gunther will hopefully back me up on this, but I've never said government creates jobs. Government has never created a job. It has set the table for jobs. It set the table for entrepreneurs, businesses, mid-sized businesses, and large businesses to expand and create jobs. Hopefully they're good-paying jobs. The idea that, if you had sat in some of these committees, and I'm pretty sure that you're an ex officiano of all the committees, and listened to the ideas that these cities and towns for their development, for their expansion, for their job creation in their neighborhoods and their cities, as we try to save greater Minnesota. Even though Representative Hamilton might question my desire to save that. You know, I now do not. I make sure he gets out of the elevator on his cart before I go out. But Mr. Chair, I think this this $74 million increase in the target will would be very helpful to create this, to continue our expansion of this particular economy. Well, you know, I have a question here.
Representative Mahoney.
Would Representative Representative Gunther yield?
Representative Gunther yields. Representative Mahoney.
Representative Gunther, you and I have served on the Jobs Committee for at least 16 years together, and I know you've carried a number of economic development bills. And my question is, do you think $74 million, do you agree with Representative Knobloch that the Jobs Committee doesn't really necessarily help business create jobs, or isn't really that important right now to continue our expansion?
Mr. Chairman,
I've got there.
Representative Mahoney, I think you said it very well. You know, it sets the stage for businesses to grow. And one of the biggest needs we have in the future is workforce development. And this bill does a lot for workforce development. Not this one, the one we have. And hopefully we can maybe enhance that target for that reason, especially when you consider 45 members from our caucus come from Greater Minnesota.
Representative Mahoney?
Why don't I ask the chair of the finance division of this if you agree with Representative Knobloch that spending in the jobs and economic development, actually it is the jobs, can you get a shorter name? do you agree with Representative Knobloch on this?
Well, and Representative Mahoney, I think that what you're characterizing I said is not exactly the way I said it. But Representative Garofalo, the chair of the committee with the long name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Mahoney, a couple of points. First of all, I'd point out to you that in the majority's budget target, you'll notice that it's a 20% increase over fiscal year 12 and 13 spending. By any acceptable growth of government measurement, that's quite a bit of spending. Second of all, I'd point out to you, since 1998, the unemployment rate in Minnesota, with the exception of, I believe, 8 or 9 months, has been lower than the state of Wisconsin since 1998. And I don't think anything quite personifies the arrogance of the DFL party than taking credit for the tax increases of the last 2 years to claim that success going back to 1998. Third and finally, Representative Mahoney, I need to get a point from you that I don't understand. When Representative Carlson was speaking earlier, he was referring to budgets where he was using the baseline budget for fiscal years 16 and 17 and measuring the budget, the majority party's budget versus that. You are now going back to 14 and 15 and comparing that for the budget target and personifying your numbers. I just want to know which numbers we're supposed to use. Are we supposed to use the numbers from the previous biennium? Are we supposed to use the base numbers for this budget? Or are we just supposed to use the numbers that make your argument?
Representative
Mahoney.
I like
the numbers that make my argument.
Okay. As long as I know.
I think everyone always agrees with that, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Garofalo, I'm using the numbers. Since how I wrote that particular budget, I really do like the 432 numbers, and I'll use those.
See no further discussion. The clerk will take the roll on the A13 amendment.
Not Black?
No.
Albright?
No.
Anderson? Harrelson?
Aye.
Cornish?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dean?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Draskowski?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Eckberth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Aye.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Franceschi?
Yep.
Liebling?
Yes.
Loon?
No.
Mahoney?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy? Nornes?
No.
Pulowski?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Torkelson?
No.
Erdo?
No.
Wiginius?
Yes.
There being 10 ayes and 16 nays, the A13 amendment is not adopted. The next amendment in the packet is the A14 amendment. Would someone like to offer the A14 amendment?
I would.
Oh, Representative Kahn.
You know, I guess I get this as a member of the state government finance division, and also as someone who chaired it for multiple years, going back before some members of the legislature were born.
You were the chair when I first came to the legislature, Representative Kahn.
I did a super job.
You did.
But, you know, one of the things that we do find out, chair of state government finance, and knows that the citizens left, she probably didn't want to hear this. But one of the problems that we find out is that it is the one part of the appropriations
process that has no fans. People don't riot in the streets protesting state government finance cuts. But in reality, these agencies are the things that form the backbone of state government. And failure to fund these can result in huge problems. What's kind of interesting is, and I was trying to see if there were members of this committee, but I don't seem to have them, but the Republicans caucus members recognize the need for investments in state government finance accounts. And I would never accuse someone of authoring bills that they didn't sincerely believe in. But just this morning, Representative Erickson asked for $2 million in additional funding for a grant to the Equip a Life nonprofit organization. Last week, Representative Howe introduced House File 1886, looking for $2 million for public radio and television. Representative Kreischer is seeking funding for a bust of former senator and television anchor Rod Grams, and an additional $100,000 for an archivist position at the Minnesota Military Museum. This morning, Representative Runback asked for $1 million for a Metropolitan Area Water Supply Advisory Committee. Representative Lucero is asking for $70,000 to support the Legislative Commission on Data Practices. And Speaker Dowd said that we need new funding for the Office of the Legislative Auditor to complete fiscal notes and revenue impact statements for the legislature. Representative Cornish wants $400,000 for a grant for Farm America. Representative Fenton tomorrow, I understand, is asking for $3 million in general fund cash and an additional $3 million in bonds to fund environmental analysis, design, and engineering for the Gateway Career Project. And the list goes on. And, you know, I think the late Senator Dirksen said this once, but $1 million here and $1 million there, and sooner or later you're talking about some real money. So, I don't know, I don't want to accuse my colleagues of being cynical, but why do you promise these funds to these worthy causes with no intention of following through? I mean, you can't cut this budget by $81 million and then add all those things to the existing budget. So I think the only thing worse than offering people no hope is offering them false hope. And I think we've seen false hope offered to a whole bunch of constituencies in this committee for the past 3 months. And let me just interrupt. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, should have done this at the start and asked for a roll call vote at this.
There will be a roll call.
Okay. So, and one of the things is one of the things that it's hard for people to realize, because it's not like people crying in the streets without clothing or health care, but to cut these budgets is counterproductive. The Department of Revenue has estimated that for every $1 cut from its budget, the state loses approximately $6 in revenue. When former Arizona Governor Jan Brewer cut several million from the Arizona Department of Revenue. I mean, who in the state is going to call out and scream and say, we need more tax collectors, we need our taxes collected better and more efficiently? But Arizona tax collections fell by a couple of $100 million. And, you know, tax collectors do bring money fairly into the state. The Secretary of State brings in, and I know we've had people asking about, are the Secretary of State fees too high? Again, I remember in the days when certain senators, I believe, who shall be remain nameless, use the Secretary of State's budget and fees as kind of a funding pot to make up any deficiencies in this division. But the Secretary of State...
Can I ask how you do that, Representative
Kahn? What?
Can I ask how you do that?
What? You just do it.
Go ahead, Representative Kahn.
You just do it. You know, it's you write the words and you write them into the bill, and, you know, no one kind of cares about business services from the Secretary of State's office. But the Secretary, even now, and I know Representative Anderson has asked some questions, acting as if she wants to make those more fair, but Secretary of State brings in twice as much funding in business service fees as is appropriated to them. So cutting that office might sound fair, but it really would help put another deficit into the state budget. So, you know, builders, which I'm certainly not, but I've been told people building buildings need solid foundations. And all the public and private organizations that deal with the state need solid foundations. So the agencies funded through state government finance bill form the foundation of state government. It gives it the state its revenue base, employment base, management base to enable the rest of state government to deliver the most effective and efficient services possible. So, you know, again, I don't know what you're going to tell your caucus members who've asked for all that additional funding from this division, but again, and it's not new to this majority. We've always had problems with the state government division because of its lack of a constituency. But I'm, you know, proud from my years of experience with it to speak up for it and speak up for its importance. And I hope that my amendment, which again just brings us back to the governor's request, will be accepted.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Kahn made a comment that she didn't believe that members would be carrying bills they didn't believe in. I just want the committee to know that I'm carrying the governor's tax bill, so it does happen.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Mr. Chairman, I guess I was only referring to members of my caucus.
Well, Representative Kahn, you know, I was pleased to, when I first came to the legislature, serve with you in the capacity that you talked about as chair of, I think it was government operations, maybe in my case. But I know you've chaired both of these committees over the years, and you've been a very fair chair. And I guess, you know, in looking at this budget, we certainly don't want to cut it more than we think the people who serve us in those various areas can afford to be cut. We do recognize that there are valuable services here. Again, I'd recognize that while the amount that I'm proposing is less than the governor is proposing, less than the forecasted base, it is up some $30 million from what it was 4 years ago. And so it's, you know, historically not necessarily that much different from where it's been. And I guess it's my judgment, having also served on this committee, that this is an amount that is doable. Representative Kahn.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, considering that I usually can't remember where I put my keys 2 minutes ago, I do remember you serving your freshman year on government operations, and I do remember that you, along with Representative Mindy Greiling, were put in charge of doing a rules reform bill. And as I recall, you worked very well and very cooperatively with us. We didn't get everything that we wanted, but we did move somewhat in the direction of reforming the rules process. So I'll hope you'll keep up that attitude of reform and constructive working with people in other parts of the state and other caucuses and get something done this year.
Well, thank you, Representative Kahn. I will do my best, and I certainly want to be open to all people's ideas, whatever party they belong to. Members, I guess I'll take the roll then, or ask the clerk to take the roll on the A14 amendment.
Knobloch?
No.
Albright?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Cornish?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dean?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Raskowski?
No.
Ruffalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Aye.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Franceschi?
Yep.
Liebling?
Yes.
Lewin?
No.
Mahoney?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy? Nornis? Pulowski? Poppy?
Yes.
Turkelson?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
There being 9 ayes and 17 nays, the A14 amendment is not adopted.
Mr. Chair.
Representative McNamara.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A15 amendment. This is a bill I'm carrying for the governor, and I would recommend people vote no and ask for a roll call.
Representative McNamara moves the A15 amendment and requests a roll call. Representative Wagenius. So, Representative McNamara, did you have anything else to say?
No,
Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. Thank you for moving that, Representative McNamara. I did bring this to the committee. As I saw the Republican proposal that you all put out today, you advertised that environment would be cut by 23%. If you, that's one way to look at it. You can look at it the way that Mr. Marks looks at it and does a percentage cut over base. Either way, these are huge cuts to the environmental area. So in this time of surplus, you are making huge cuts to the money that protects our air and protects our water. And the cuts will be far bigger than that because, Representative McNamara, you have promised substantial funding to Representative Fabian in his House File 616 and 617. Very large fiscal notes for those. So not only will you have the cuts of $24 million, you will have an additional cut of $12 million, roughly, besides all the other kinds of things that may happen in your committee, like wetlands. So, members, this is a little bit of a different area since a lot of things are funded by dedicated funds. So Representative McNamara does not have lots of choices where to make his cuts. He's going to be cutting waters in DNR or PCA, parks and trails, forestry. That's where the big money is. It's just like the bank robber. You go where the money is. And those are the areas that need to be robbed in order to make your budget cuts. So with that, he's asked for a roll call. Let's have it.
Okay. Members, before we have the roll call, I need to announce that the clerk didn't hear one person vote in favor of the last amendment. Mr. Stone did hear a vote for the last amendment. I had recorded it as only 9 votes in favor, and I want to change that and announce that there were 10 votes in favor and 17 against. And I just want to make it clear that we had not heard one of the members vote for it and that we're correcting that now. And then I guess we'll, members, and I guess I just say that, you know, it is about the amount of money that we're proposing for the Environment Committee is about the same as we proposed 4 years ago. I do think that there are some, you know, other sources of funds that are available. We have seen, of course, a lot of additional money going to the environment area through the legacy amendment. We're not talking about supplanting anything. I'm certainly not. But with that, members, I'll ask the clerk to take the roll on the A15 amendment. Oh, I'm sorry. Did you want to speak again, Representative Wagenius?
Yes, if I could.
Sure.
You said that there was, let's go back to the budget you did 4 years ago. Well, the problem with that budget is you cut DNR waters so badly that they could not meet their statutory obligations, and not even close. So in order to meet the numbers that you're proposing here, you're going to have to cut waters or forestry or parks and trails. So to say we're going back to an old budget goes back to cuts to parks and trails, cuts to waters, and I suspect we can't cut forestry because there is an industry that depends on our helping them out. And as you mentioned, we can't supplant and use the legacy money for ongoing expenses in DNR and PCA. Certainly not to pay the costs of permitting for water permits. And right now, Mr. Chairman, you may not know, but folks who want a water permit do not pay the cost of that water permit. That cost is paid for by other funds, probably the solid waste tax. And so if there is not money to pay for those, then permits are going to slow down. And here in the last, the thing that your caucus has asked for the most is to speed up permitting. And now you're asking to speed up permitting and take away the money. It makes no common sense.
Well, Representative Wagenius, I think, you know, that we are going to be able to make this budget work without all the dire consequences that you mentioned, and we look forward to working with you on it. With that, I'll have the clerk take the roll on the A15 amendment.
Non-Black?
No.
Albright?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Harrelson?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dean?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Duskowski? Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Eckberth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Aye.
Weinstein?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Franceschi?
Yes.
Liebling?
Yes.
Moon?
No.
Mahoney?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Nornis?
No.
Pulowski?
Yes.
Abby?
Yes.
Torkelson?
No.
Erdahl? Wagenius?
Yes.
There being 11 ayes and 16 nays, the A15 amendment is not adopted. And is, just a second.
Then she's in one.
Oh, okay. All right, I guess the A18 is next in the packet, even though the number is higher than the A16 amendment. Unless anyone has any preference one way or another, I'll go with the A18 amendment. Representative Liebling?
Yes.
Moves the A18 amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like a roll call on that one as well.
A roll call will be provided on the A18 amendment.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Chair, we started to talk a little bit before about Health and Human Services in the majority party's budget, and you are cutting about $1 billion, which I find really, really surprising. At a time when we have a $2 billion budget deficit,
budget surplus, and you are cutting this area, very important area of the budget, as though we had a deficit. What is really distressing about this is what Representative Kahn referred to before, giving people false hope. Because members of the GOP caucus have been putting in bills like there's no tomorrow to spend money in this area. And I actually am quite supportive of many of the things, if not all of the things that they've put in, because what they've been doing is giving voice to the people in this state who have been telling us that there are still lots and lots of needs. Lots of needs. And I'm very glad to hear that the majority is going to fund Representative Schumacher's bill. That's, I understand, somewhere around $200 million. I haven't seen the fiscal note on that. But the other evening on the House floor, we had a long debate about Representative Hamilton's bill to raise the rates for home and community-based providers by 5%. And I know that he's very passionate about that. I know that many of us, bipartisanly, are very passionate about that. That, as I understand, is about $300 million. But there are many, many other things. And the idea that this budget is just growing and saying, well, that's where the money is, I guess. This is where the money is. So we're just going to rob it because it's where the money is. But the money is there for a reason, and that is because the needs are there. And this is growing because the needs are growing. And part of the reason the needs are growing is the age wave, which we're all hearing so much about. And as we get older, we need more health care services, and some of that you're seeing in the nursing homes. But another big chunk of that you're going to see in other settings as well. Another big reason that this area of the budget is growing is that we have more people with disabilities, and they're living longer. And this is a good problem to have, but just today, I think it was, in one of the committees, we heard a Lohmer bill that's about children with Down syndrome and related conditions and giving information to their parents. And it's a wonderful bill. We all supported it, but one of the testifiers mentioned that children who are born with Down syndrome used to live around, I think it was 20 years. And now, they live around 64 years. Well, this is a wonderful thing. I don't think there's anyone who would deny that. But that comes with cost. Because although many people with Down syndrome can be quite independent and they may need some special services, but they can get along, there are many others who are going to need help from the state, from the federal government, and they will need it for their entire lives. And we spend a lot of our health and human service budget helping with people with disabilities, and now we're under court orders with the Jensen settlement, and also it's the right thing to do to give people with disabilities the ability to live in as independent a setting as possible and to have actualized lives as much as possible like all of us want. But the problem is that these things cost money. And there may be some people on our programs who are not, shouldn't be there, who, you know, there's always going to be people who are getting things they don't need or don't deserve, and we always have to be vigilant about that. But we are not going to cut $1 billion by finding people who don't belong on medical assistance. That just isn't going to happen. At the same time, we've got all these needs, and members of the GOP caucus have been putting in these bills everything from Representative Anderson has a little bill for healthy eating at home, which would help improve health and get people eating healthier foods. That's $2 million. We've got Representative McDonald has money for the federally qualified health care centers, another important bill. There are just lots and lots of these. Representative Hamilton has local public health care grants, $25 million. Representative Zerwas is, and many of us are very interested in doing better with dental care, which is a relatively low-cost item for the service but has huge impacts on people's health and can save money down the road. And I could just go on, and members of your caucus are very caring. And have made promises through many different groups and very many different people, and I know that nobody said, I promise I'm getting this money for you. But when people came to me early on and said, we've got our bill from last year, will you carry it? I said, go talk to somebody in the GOP caucus because they're in the majority and see if they're interested in your bill. And we know that that's the way things work around here. And many of those members did pick up the challenge. They listened. They said yes. They said, here's something I think is worthy that ought to be funded, and they carried those bills. And a conservative estimate of the total of those bills is about almost $1 billion, and that's additional spending. So I think that, and we're not even talking about things the governor has proposed. The governor obviously has proposed more for children and families. The GOP spending is more for elderly people, and this goes back to what we talked about before. What I mentioned about the sort of the intergenerational aspect of this that's going on. But, you know, let's be clear. We need funding for elderly people. We need spending and funding for programs for people with disabilities. But we also need funding for our kids and kids at risk. And if we don't do things like put money into children's dental services and focus on children who are at risk and worry about things like fetal alcohol syndrome, we are not doing ourselves any budgetary favors at all. I mean, even not even thinking about the human impact, but talking about the budget. There are things that we can do this year that will save us money and that will increase the productivity of our people. And I don't look at that as spending. I look at it as investment. And I think a lot of these members do as well. And so, Mr. Chair, I just look at this budget that the GOP caucus is putting forward, and I think it is totally inadequate. In light of a $2 billion budget surplus that we would be making, that you would be making, $1 billion in cuts in this very important area. And I just find that absolutely amazing. And not even to mention that we've got money that's going to be needed in child protection, which is something the governor's put forward. I can't imagine that we're going to leave this session without funding child protection so that we can at least hope not to have any more disasters like we've seen in this state. That's such a shame on this state. But there are many other things that are also extremely worthy and important that under your budget target are simply not going to be funded. And that's why I would ask members to vote yes on my amendment. And just to be clear, what it does is it's taking the extra little bit of money, the $314 million that's on the bottom line, and then taking the rest from the tax bill. And that's how I'm structuring to increase this budget target back up to the governor's budget target in Health and Human Services. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Well, thank you, Representative Liebling. I know you feel passionately about this area, and there are a lot of very legitimate needs in this area, and this is certainly an area that the state has an interest in funding, we are funding it. And as I mentioned, members, if you look at the all funds budget, that includes not just the general fund, but federal funds, other funds, this is scheduled underneath the forecast base to go up $5.5 billion from the biennium we're in to the next biennium. I mean, $5.5 billion is way more than just about every other committee budget in here, but the increase in the all funds budget is $5.5 billion, 18%. And what we have a long history of going back many years in the state, members, is the Health and Human Services area growing and continually outstripping inflation and resulting in other areas, higher education being one of them, getting a smaller and smaller share of the total budget because Health and Human Services gets a larger and larger share. And we aren't talking about actually cutting the amount of money we're spending here. Even underneath the proposal that I'm bringing forward, we would spend $443 million more in general fund money. I guess I don't have a calculation yet for what the all funds budget would be but it would certainly be in billions of extra dollars that we would be spending in the health and human services area. And so I'm sensitive to some of the things you're talking about, Representative Liebling. I'm interested in hearing other ideas you have on how to save money. We have some ideas too. We are concerned about the people that are in this area, but at the same time, we're concerned about the incredible growth we see here, which is just simply unsustainable in a long term. Representative Hillstrom also had her hand up. You want to, Representative Hillstrom, and then Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, I'm hoping you can answer this question. Can you tell me this consolidated fund statement that has all of the revenue sources that is projected to grow, as the Chair has stated, what's the money, where does it come from, and why is it going to grow?
Representative Hillstrom, the short answer to the where the budget growth is in health and human services is Medicaid. Minnesota is not unlike any of the other 49 states if you look at the growth. And quite frankly, it's eating our state budgets. And it's one that we're going to have to tackle just like all the other states. If you look at the decisions that were made to move folks that were previously on state-based programs to Medicaid-based programs, it does two things. It increases our net costs, as well as it decreases our ability to spend less in those areas, as well as change our programs, because when we tie ourselves to federal funds, we cannot change eligibility benefits or other things that we can do, asset limits and other things. So that's why it becomes very, very, very expensive. It grows very quickly. Unfortunately, we've not seen the cost savings as we were promised and hoped for and predicted by making these changes, and actually we've seen increases. So when you look at medical spending and Medicaid spending in particular, Minnesota's not like other states, but it's one that we just absolutely have to get a handle on, and that's why I think that it's important to look at this. And also, as we look into the future, if we were to have a 2003 recession, size recession, or a 2008-09 recession, and look at the deficits that they produced, under the Pawlenty 2003 budget of about $3.5 billion, and the 2011 budget of almost $6 billion. And you were to project that forward to a 20% of $42 billion, we'd look at an $8.5 billion deficit. Now, how would we do that? If you look at the budget that we have before us, what if we had to deal with an $8.5 billion budget deficit? The answer is that each year it becomes less and less possible to deal with these things because of the growth of Medicaid. So that's a long answer to your question, Representative Hillstrom.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Dean, the question was where the money comes from, not where the money goes. So if your budget target is lower, but there's all these other funds, my question is where are you getting the rest of the money?
Representative Dean.
Representative Hillstrom, we're going to fund our priorities within the means of the target. We're going to achieve savings, we believe, through a number of bills and initiatives that we're going to be looking at as our HHS budget moves forward, and you can look for that in the next couple weeks.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe the person to ask is Mr. Marks. Mr. Marks, what are the other all funds? That's the question.
Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hillstrom, the biggest item within that would be federal funds. Representative Dean mentioned medical assistance. The federal funds in the health and human services area are approximately $7.1 billion in fiscal 14, $8.2 billion in 15, $9.3 billion in fiscal 16, and $9.5 billion in fiscal 17. That would the Healthcare Access Fund is also part of that, but the bulk of it's going to be federal funds.
Thank you.
Representative Liebling.
So thank you, Mr. Chair. And I also wanted to ask if Representative Dean a question, if I may. And that is, Representative Dean, I know you had a bill to cut the Minnesota Care program. And as we know, the Minnesota Care program is funded out of our health care access fund, which is the provider taxes that flow into that fund mainly, and those are what we call the sick tax, widely disliked by health care providers, but it has been funding our Minnesota Care program for quite a while. And my question to you, Representative Dean, is if you are planning to meet this budget target by including your bill to get rid of Minnesota Care as we know it and then use those health care access funds to do something else in the budget to make up for part of this low target that you have.
Representative Dean?
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, the short answer to that is that there is no health care access fund because the balances within that fund have been greatly depleted by the shift in the last legislative session to move the health care access fund to general funds. So we were actually coming into the biennium in a deficit in the health care access fund, which you accurately point out is fed by a 2.2% provider tax that in fact would have been reduced to a 1.5% provider tax had that not been shifted over for one-time uses in your to solve your last budget. However, if you look forward, we were told that the BHP program, formerly Minnesota Care, the vast majority of Minnesota Care patients were moved over to Medicaid, and the folks on our BHP program, which is the only one in the country, which is modeled after what was the ACA's version of a public option, was to be fed through federal funds. We were told that that would be given to us by the federal government. Well, in fact, we are being reimbursed at such a low rate that we have to backfill that fund to reimburse the difference between a lowest silver reimbursement from the federal government and what the BHP is actually costing us, which is the difference between a Toyota Corolla and a Mercedes-Benz 500. So that's what's happening to our health care access fund dollars is going to make up that difference.
Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And well, Representative Dean, that even though there's, I think, about $60 million now projected in the health care access fund, the current budget forecast counts the spending on the current Minnesota Care population. If I'm not mistaken, there's about $800 million there. I thought over the biennium that was kind of being counted as forecast spending for the Minnesota Care population. And maybe Mr. Marks can correct me if I have my figures not quite right, but that's the money that I'm asking you about, whether you would be planning to, and just so people understand, there's in HHS, we use a lot of acronyms. BHP stands for Basic Health Plan, just so people know what we're talking about. And that is, anyway, so that would be my question, Representative Dean, whether you're counting on taking money that is currently forecast to be spent on our Minnesota Care program and using it to balance your budget.
Were you addressing your question to Representative Dean or Mr. Marks?
Well, to Representative Dean, because Mr. Marks, am I correct about the 800 or so million? Let's just maybe answer that one first.
Well, Mr. Marks.
Mr. Chair and Representative Liebling, in the forecast projection for spending in fiscal 16 and 17 out of the health care access fund on Minnesota Care is $822 million.
Okay, so
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So that's the money I'm talking about, Representative Dean, and just wondering whether, since that money is coming from health care access fund dollars, I'm wondering whether your plan is to take that money and use it to replace general fund dollars to help balance your budget, since you're going to get rid of Minnesota Care as we know it.
And members, I should step in here and say that I know we had a ruling by the Speaker on the House floor here in the last week or two about you know, questioning members' intentions and plans and votes and that sort of thing. And I guess I'm not going to say that we can't do that here. I think we've had a more informal policy here at the committee level than what was on the floor. But I just thought I should mention that since it had been a ruling of the Speaker on the House floor. So I'm not sure if you have particular plans solidified in that area, Representative Dean, but would you like to respond?
Sure. I think it's a legitimate question because it looks at the overall philosophy or the program stance for the state. We had a Minnesota Care program which was unique in the country that was state-based for people with low incomes. We currently have that goes from 133% of federal poverty guideline up to 200 is in the BHP. Below 133 is in Medicaid. Above that would be from 200% of federal poverty guideline to 400 would be in the health care exchange, and we help folks buy private health insurance through subsidies and cost sharing. We are unique in that we have two different programs within that, and it's really kind of difficult because we're trying to make the old Minnesota Care try to do something different. And as a state, I think the program statement would be that we're going to try to get people of low income to buy private health care insurance policies and help them make them be affordable. The majority changed the policy of the health care access fund going feeding directly into the Minnesota Care, changed that to the general fund to reflect the eight federal ACA, and this would follow that in terms of helping to people to buy private health care insurance policies with help from state and federal funds and cost sharing.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think that was a yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Well, I'm not sure if it was Representative Liebling, but anyway, Representative Kahn.
Well, one of the things, I know we like to talk about these budgets in terms of sadness of people and doing good for people and those kinds of things, but the other thing we need to look at is we need to look at the economic effect of cutting these budgets. For example, when we cut basic health care, that means that people end up getting their health care at the place that one place they can't turn them down, and that's the emergency room, which is the least effective and the most expensive way to get health care. A colleague of mine that I work with on a committee on law and science at the University of Minnesota was passionate about child's dentistry, which I think there's almost no funding for at various places, and he would tell the story of a child who had a tooth abscess. What's that? Maybe $100 or something like that to get that totally taken care of. It was not taken care of. It ended up becoming spreading to the brain, ended up going to the emergency room, hospitalization, and finally death. The cost of that, just forget the sorrow of it all for the family, but the cost of it was unbelievably more than the ability to have treated that abscess tooth at the earliest point would have been. And so I wish we would start getting some good numbers on what the costs of this, of saving these pennies on some of these projects are. And the fact that we're not Bangladesh, we don't let people die in the streets. And once you're not letting people die in the streets, that means you've got to pay for health care at some point, and often the most expensive point. So, just the philosophy.
Thank you. Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the A18 amendment.
Knobloch?
No.
Albright?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Carlson?
Yes.
Cornish?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dean?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Draskowski?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Aye.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Benchesky?
Yes.
Liebling?
Yes.
Loon?
No.
Mahoney?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Nornis?
No.
Pulowski?
Yes.
Hoppe?
Yes.
Turkelson?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
There have been 11 ayes and 17 nays. The A18 amendment is not adopted. Next, we have the A16 amendment.
Mr. Chair?
Who is Representative Poppe?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move the A16 and ask for a roll call.
Representative Poppe moves the A16 amendment. There will be a roll call. Representative Poppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this would increase the capital investment amount, and we had some discussion at the beginning of the meeting talking about whether or not to do a bonding bill this year, doing a bonding bill next year, each year, one larger one in the second year, whatever we're looking at. This would increase the amount. It still adds the flexibility, or leaves the flexibility of when you would do that. Certainly it makes some sense to do one this year in addition to doing one next year, because there is a backlog of need. Certainly, each of us probably can think of bonding requests that we each are proposing or may have proposed in the past, or can know what those might be. But for me personally, I've been the beneficiary in my district of having flood mitigation dollars. I've got a college that's received funds. We have received wastewater funds in some of the small cities. So we've had a variety of things that have happened. There is a number of projects that are on the HEPR list right now for the Minscu system. And so because of all of that, plus the favorable interest rates that we have right now, increasing this amount would allow for us to either have a bonding bill this year or just increase the amount next year, so we can have a substantive bonding bill and be able to take care of a lot of the need. So I'd appreciate your support.
Well, first of all, I have to say kudos to Representative Pulowski for recognizing earlier that, yes, we actually could have a bonding bill underneath the resolution that I laid out during this year. I do remember from my days back in the bonding committee that the general rule of thumb was that you could get $100 of bonding for every $1 of debt service in the second year, but in the first year of the biennium, it was about $1 would support about $10 worth of bonds. And I think that's about borne out still, because in the original forecast, there was $220 million of bonding forecasted for this year, and by not doing it, we cut about $20,800,000 off the budget. And for next year, it's forecasted to be a $800 million bonding bill, and it's about $8 million that it costs. And so by doing it in the second year, you give yourself a lot more bonding capacity than doing it in the first year. And that, I think, is why, at least for a long time, there was a tradition that you did your main bonding in the second year and you only did whatever you needed in the first year for an emergency. And I guess I really haven't heard of a whole lot of emergencies out there this year, at least in the sense that they've been maybe traditionally defined. Not that there aren't things that are important, but I guess in looking at prioritizing things, to me, I guess I hadn't really heard about emergencies. It seemed to me that we maybe should look at bonding in the second year. And then the other thing we heard when we had the commissioner here just yesterday is that we are bumping up very close to our bonding limit in terms of how much we can bond based on the guidelines we have right now. If we would do a, say, $800 million bonding bill this year and another $800 million one next year. And so I guess for all those reasons, members, I'd oppose Representative Poppe's amendment and ask that you vote no. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, you made an excellent point, which is, you know, we're up against our
our limit with bonding. And I wanted to just reiterate an earlier comment that Representative Lincheski made about our kind of over-reliance on bonding for transportation, whether it's GO or trunk highway. And but if, you know, the majority wants to go down that path, there is an argument to be made that we shouldn't put this off. You know, these road and bridge projects don't go away. They just get more expensive. And, you know, we've heard a lot about efficiencies. We have to do more efficiencies. But the most inefficient thing we can do is put these projects off and continue to put them out into the future as they get more expensive. So, you know, as we're talking about bonding, I continue to have, you know, concerns about the over-reliance on bonding, you know, for the transportation portion of your budget bill. There's other ways to finance these things, and obviously a certain amount of bonding is appropriate, particularly local roads and bridges, as we've traditionally done in the bonding bill, but I think to over-rely on bonding and the general fund, for that matter, for transportation is problematic.
Representative Kahn.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I had a little trouble understanding the arithmetic that you just went through about the costs of bond. That might be true for a biennium, but our bonds are always let for a certain period of time. And so, you know, life doesn't end at the end of a biennium. So I think it's a real fallacy to say that if we wait until the second year, we get more for our dollars of bonding. We get about the same amount, I do remember one year when we didn't do a bonding rate at all of bill. I think this is not 2 years ago, but the 2 years before that, when we delayed doing a bonding bill and the interest rates went up dramatically. And I think the number that it ended up costing us was something like about $20 million extra in interest because we waited. I don't know what direction the economy is moving now and what rates look like. I do believe we've had some indications from the Fed chairman that interest rates may very well go up. And if that's true, then we're far better off to move as fast as we could with anything that's going to be charged interest like bonding.
Well, Representative Kahn, I certainly was only speaking of the biennium we're in and what we have to put into our budget resolution when I was speaking of the debt service and the bonds. You're right, there are long ongoing costs after that, and
with what year you put it in.
They don't change, but you do have to account for them in the first year, and it's easier to make room for other needs if you do bond in the second year of the biennium rather than the first year. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, of course, I'm an advocate for a bonding bill this year for the very reasons that Representative Poppe outlined. You know, I'm one that follows the business pages quite closely, and there are a number of economists that are saying that interest rates probably will, in a short period of time, start to go up. So there's clearly an advantage, as Representative Kahn has pointed out, to taking advantage of the low interest rates now. But I do have a question, Mr. Chairman, and perhaps it would be directed to Mr. Marks. You indicated that we were bumping up against our limit. And if I recall the discussion we had on bonding, Mr. Marks pointed out, and I'd like him to confirm it one way or another, that we have to keep in mind that we're constantly paying off the bonds. And maybe Mr. Marks could help us in this discussion on that question. And then after that, I do have a another question.
Sure. Well, Mr. Marks, I know we're putting you a little bit on the spot, but if we did a $800 million bonding bill this year and another $800 million bonding bill next year, I guess, do you want to opine on where it would be according to the bonding guidelines?
Mr. Chair, not particularly. I would point out that as of the February forecast, Guideline 1, which says that bonds that are issued and outstanding will not exceed 3.25% of personal income in the state. It pointed out, or the report says there's $689 million of capacity there. if we have an $850 million bonding bill this year and an $800 million one next year, it's going to be plus transportation bonding, transportation geo bonding, and then this guideline also takes into account any other bonding sort of things like within this amount, the appropriation bonds that are paying off the tobacco securitization bonds are counted, for example. Any of those things work in this. I don't know how fast existing bonds are being paid off, and Budget Director Kelly yesterday had stated only about 15% of bonds that are authorized in 1 year are issued in that year. However, someone else pointed out to me later yesterday but in last year's bonding bill, it was about 30%. So there are a whole bunch of variables here, and I'm not going to predict where we're at on it at this point without a lot more information. So it's close.
Mr. Chairman, my question to Mr. Marks, I know the amendment before us is for 850. My question, and you reframed it for me but didn't frame it the same way I asked it. You probably had an agenda in framing it the way you did. I'm not going to speculate.
Well, Representative Carlson, I framed it that way because
of the amendment before us, I suspect, Mr. Chairman. But my point was trying to solicit some information about how fast the bonds were being paid off, and also, again, one that reads the business pages quite faithfully, personal income is going up, and that's also one of the benchmarks that we use. I didn't know how much information Mr. Marks had at the tip of his tongue, but my question wasn't necessarily related directly to the amendment that's before us, and that's the way you reframed it. But I did say I had another question, and maybe I think he's back behind Chair David's. The chair of the Capital Investment Committee, I did have a question because sometimes we have targets of opportunity with public-private matches, and I don't know if any of the projects that would be before us are such that we would be able to take advantage of some private donors in the case of, especially when you're dealing with some of our college and university buildings, and or public dollars from other sources. I would pose that question to the Capital Investment Chair.
Okay, well, before I recognize Representative Torkelson, I do want to say in regard to your mentioning that I was reframing your question, Representative Carlson, I guess I didn't think I was, because my understanding of the amendment was that this would have allowed for an $850 million bonding bill, such as the governor proposed. I believe these are the governor's numbers. And so there would now be an $850 million bonding bill this year. And the built into the base is an $800 million bonding bill next year. So I guess I was presuming, and perhaps I was wrong in presuming this, but I was presuming that if we were going up to the governor's numbers and allowing for not only the $800 million that was built into the base, but another $850 million this year, that it was reasonable to presume that that's what bonding was going to be done. And that's why I framed the question to Mr. Marks that way. But
Mr. Chairman,
maybe I shouldn't have.
I can understand your assumption. I just want to make it clear that that wasn't the question I asked.
All right.
Your assumption was based on the amendment that was before us, which was perhaps easy to assume that, but what I was really asking was how fast the bonds were being paid off, and we can maybe have that discussion later offline, maybe as the fiscal analysts have a chance to take a look at that, maybe check with MMB to see. But I did have that second question that I referenced. I was just curious. I know Representative Poppy indicated that there were a number of projects that had been left over from last year. There are a number of projects, I know, because I've had conversations with some of the agencies in the higher ed communities, that they do have shovel-ready projects that could move forward rather rapidly. And by the way, it doesn't pay to have leaky roofs, because they cost us more if there are any of those out there, and I don't know. But what I was interested in was that whether there were any public or private matches that were available, because sometimes we can leverage with state dollars larger projects that put a lot of people to work. And if he could maybe respond to that if he has any information.
Representative Torkelson, do you have any information on that subject?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any detailed information for you, Representative Carlson, although I can assure you that whenever someone comes with a bonding proposal to me and my CA, we always ask the question about other funds available for these projects, and in many cases there are local funds and other fund sources available to assist in these projects. But I will just remind everyone that it does typically take years to get bonds let. These, even though we say they're shovel ready, it just doesn't turn out that way. It takes time to acquire property and other contracts in order to let bond projects moving forward, and it's not an instant process. Never has been, as far as I can tell.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, when I ask the question, you sometimes know what at least part of the answer is, and I'm familiar with one project that I can probably talk to Representative Torkelson about if there were a decision to move forward with the bonding bill, but it's about a $20 million project, and in that case, the local funding would cover most of it, but there would be a need for 4.5 in bonding, so you have a $20 million project. And I know employment is good. We're still interested in putting people to work, however. And, some of the conversation earlier, and it fits into the bonding. The Twin Cities is one of the most booming areas in the entire country, maybe even number one among major metropolitan areas. But Greater Minnesota is lagging behind. And so when we talk about the bonding bill and some of the projects in Greater Minnesota, where they're lagging behind, we can put sometimes a lot of people to work. And by taking advantage of not only issuing the bonds at a low interest rate, but also where matches are sometimes available, you can have a tremendous impact on the local economy. And that's one of the reasons that I'm personally interested in the Poppy Amendment going forward, provide opportunity for people to go to work, and when you have good competition out there, sometimes you get some pretty good bids on those projects as well. That's another component in all this. But I think we do need more information from MMB. So with that, thank you.
Okay, thanks, Representative Carlson. I agree with you. I think we do need to sooner or later find out a little bit more about the debt capacity from MMB. I guess if you have a project that would take $5 million of bonding, I guess, as Representative Pawlowski's pointed out to us, that is something we actually could do this year. But if there are projects out there like that have those sort of matches, I guess that's good to know about. And I would, offline, Representative Carlson, like to learn more about it so I'm aware of it.
Well, thank you.
With that, members, Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll just chime in here a little bit. And I was really glad to hear Representative Mahoney almost sound like a Republican earlier. The government doesn't create jobs. And Representative Mahoney, I think you're right. As a matter of fact, I'm looking forward to the taxes portion of this budget, Mr. Chair. It will let Minnesotans keep a full $2 billion of their own money. The best bonding project we could have is to let people keep their own money. $2 billion of jobs that the private sector in Minnesota will create. Looking forward to this budget. Thank you.
Well, that, members, will take the roll on the A-16 amendment.
Knobloch?
No.
Albright?
No.
Anderson?
No.
Carlson?
Aye.
Cornish?
No.
Davids?
No.
Dean?
No.
Detmer?
No.
Druskowski?
No.
Garofalo?
No.
Gunther?
No.
Hackbarth?
No.
Hamilton?
No.
Hillstrom?
Aye.
Hornstein?
Yes.
Kahn?
Yes.
Limczewski?
Yes.
Fabling?
Yes.
Loon?
No.
Mahoney?
Yes.
McNamara?
No.
Murphy?
Yes.
Nornes?
No.
Pawlowski?
Yes.
Poppy?
Yes.
Torkelson?
No.
Erdahl?
No.
Wagenius?
Yes.
Or not. Leave them to swing wherever they fall apart.
There being 11 ayes and 17 nays, the A-16 amendment is not adopted. And Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have an amendment that's being passed out. And I'd like a roll call, Mr. Chair.
Representative Lincheski has got the motion here. We'll wait for it to be passed out. Representative Lincheski, do you want to describe it while it's being passed out?
I do, Mr. Chair.
And all right. Go ahead, Representative Lincheski.
And, I'll wait for just a sec. Looks like most people have it. Mr. Chair, you know, it's pretty clear what this does is it adds language that says within the tax target that the fourth tier of the income tax must be repealed. And, you know, Mr. Chair, if I could just talk about it a little bit.
Sure. Go ahead, Representative Lincheski.
We've had a lot of, I think the tax bill debate when I carried that bill was, it's one of the five longest in state history, and I think it was 16 hours. And you weren't here, but
I'm glad of it, yeah. Hearing that.
And it was, I mean, that was mostly just the minority then speaking, and I just did a rebuttal at the end. And so we heard hours and hours and hours. Almost every single member of the caucus got up and said this was the worst policy ever. There are a couple exceptions. Of course, the freshmen didn't because they weren't here, but I still have my notes from that, so I could walk you through everybody's speeches, and pretty much everybody in this room made one on the other side of the table there. I'm trying to think if anybody didn't. I think Representative, no, Erdahl, you did too. I was thinking maybe Erdahl didn't, but everybody else spoke against the provision that's right here. And so this is an opportunity for people to repeal that tax that was so egregious. And you certainly have the surplus to do it. Mr. Chair, I'm asking for a roll call on this, and you yourself stated as you walked through your budget resolution direction within the budget resolution, you said that we're going to pass the Schumacher bill for long-term care. So that was in here. And you said we're going to only do one-year bonding. And you said that we are going to take $384 million in current sales tax dedications and spend them on transportation. So you're providing a lot of direction in those areas already, and this would simply add more direction.
Well, Representative Lincheski, I did say those things. I think those are things that our leadership believes in and that our caucus believes in, but they are not actually items that are written in to the DE4 amendment or the resolution as is now amended. And the reason for that is that it's in violation of Rule 4.03. And if you would go to Rule 4.03, I'm not sure how many people have it handy. You got yours right,
yes.
There. Good for you. All right. You go to Rule 4.03 and you look underneath subsection B. And then you look to number 4. It says the budget resolution must not specify, limit, or prescribe revenues or expenditures by any category other than those specified in clauses 1, 2, 3, and 4. And that is setting a maximum limit on net expenditures, setting an amount on the budget reserve and cash flow account, setting net spending limits for each budget category, or setting limits for expenditures for funds other than the general fund. And this simply doesn't meet that, Representative Lincheski. It's specifying a subsection of the tax committee, talking about the fourth tier of the income tax. That's something different than that, Representative Lincheski. And I guess I'll certainly give you a chance to respond.
Well, and Mr. Chair, I think you probably know perfectly well I knew that, and I knew the rule, and that's why it was here.
You know,
I was waiting for you to find
it. I saw that little yellow
yes,
book there on your right next to you earlier.
Yes, so, you know, and I understand that, Mr. Chair, but, you know, the problem that is before us is you yourself just did the same thing. And so while it's not in language, you walked through for all of us what's going to happen in these targets. And in fact, for most of the meeting, when members were asking for input from issue areas, you answered the questions, and they had to direct their questions to the chairs. So, I mean, there has been a lot of coaching or directing or something going on in these budget resolutions. So, you know, I understand it's out of order according to how you're going to rule here, but, you know, maybe I can just ask you, Mr. Chair, since it's not going to be in writing, is it your intent to repeal the fourth tier?
Well, Representative Lincheski, I see Representative Davids wanted to raise his hand, so I'm going to maybe call on him and let him respond to that. But let me first say that, I mean, when I talked about how, you know, it's my expectation that these things are going to happen, of course, I'm not the Speaker. The Speaker, I suppose, could change his mind on things. This is the expectation that I have that we are going to be doing the Schumacher bill, for example. But there's a difference between saying, yes, that's my expectation, that's my understanding, and actually putting it into the budget resolution whereby we would be required by the budget resolution to do it, which would be in violation of the rules. And I think that's why we have the rules. That's why they're written the way they are. They haven't changed from when your side had the majority, and that is why I think the particular amendment you're bringing forward is out of order. But let me recognize Representative Lincheski.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I was asking you, and I want to ask Representative Davids the same question, but I actually sincerely wanted to ask you, is that your position that the fourth tier should be repealed?
Is it my position that this is going to be an item that's in our budget repealing the fourth tier?
Okay.
If that's what your question is, I would say I would defer to the work of the committee, and I would also say that, you know, the governor's made it very clear that the passage of the fourth tier was a priority of his, and yeah, I guess I try to be a practical person. I know this would be a expensive item to repeal. While I think we'd have the money to do it, I don't know that it makes sense to allocate all that money to something that's unlikely to happen. And so from that standpoint, I guess I don't think it would be, myself, in my own opinion, advisable to try to do this year.
Well, Mr. Chair, can I then, and I do have another question for you on this topic, but Mr. Chair, can I ask Representative Davids if he's intending to repeal the egregious tax policy that was put into law? That the now majority so strongly opposed and now has all the funds available to repeal that tax.
Well, I was going to recognize Representative Davids anyway, Representative Lincheski, so let me recognize Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Chair Knobloch, and Chair Knobloch, thanks for not ruling this out of order so quick. When I get done, you can rule it out of order. and Chair Lincheski, when you ask that of Representative Knobloch, you're asking the wrong chair. That's my business. That'll be my decision. It'll be the committee's decision. But I think it's egregious tax policy. I think it's terrible tax policy. I'm also practical, and I want to get a tax bill signed. If I'm going to, politically speaking, stick my thumb in the eye of the governor, I'm probably not going to get the bill signed. And so I'm very pragmatic as a pragmatic issue. I don't like the tax policy. But you sit there and act like I'm the one that can get rid of the fourth tier. The Senate's not going to get rid of the fourth tier. The governor's not going to get rid of the fourth tier. So you're proposing something that's not going to happen. And so, members, that I thought that was a very bad tax policy. I stood up on the House floor. I mean, money loves to be loved. And when you don't love it and have a fourth tier, it can leave. I think it's terrible tax policy, but that doesn't mean that it's going to go away. I'd love to get rid of it. But that doesn't mean I'm going to waste a whole lot of time and effort on something that isn't going to happen. I'm not going to write checks my body can't cash. And so it's not Chair Knobloch's decision. And, you know, I'm sure not going to debate tax policy here today. That's not what this meeting's for. Let the HHS folks debate HHS. We'll take care of the tax stuff. That's not what today's about. In my spirit of peace and love,
I want to get a tax bill signed. I want the governor to sign it. And it's going to be a very robust, a very, very good tax bill. Whether this provision is or not, who knows? And I'm not telling. It'll be. So you know, we're wasting a lot of time here today on something that is clearly out of order. The tax bill will be released when the tax bill is released, and we will have that debate at that time. But all I could say to the committee is, don't stop believing, members. Don't stop believing.
Okay, members, I don't want to spend a lot more time on this, but Representative Lincheski.
Well, Mr. Chair, I mean, I think this is the last amendment before us, and I know we have till midnight, so, you know, that's 2.5 hours. So I wouldn't, you know, worry you're not going to make your deadline.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was the last amendment, Representative Lincheski, but all right.
Well, maybe there's more. It's the last one I have. I had another one, but I'm not going to offer it. And, you know, I know you're going to rule it out of order, but, you know, Mr. Chair, you know, that's why I first directed the question to you, because this isn't the tax committee, yet it's your budget resolution, and you have the number on the sheet, and in fact, in all the issue areas, you've been answering the questions for the chairs, which, as I've stated, I find a little interesting, but...
Well, it's my budget resolution, so I thought I should probably speak to it.
Yeah, and I hear that. I mean, I know, you know, it's just a different style, and, you know, it's just... However, that's fine. I guess, you know, the reason I think, you know, it's just interesting to think about, and certainly, you know, with you ruling this out of order, there won't be a vote here today. So I understand that. But I, you know, want to assure that there will be that opportunity for majority members in the future, yet this year. I guess it'll be on the floor. And you'll get that roll call opportunity to show your, to back up your viewpoints there. But, you know, to the question of, you know, is this unrealistic? I mean, is there any member of the majority who thinks a bill with a $2 billion tax cut will be signed by the governor, no matter what the tax cuts are? Or thinks that the Senate will do a $2 billion tax cut bill? So, I mean, come on. We know that budget resolutions are supposed to be the values and principles of the majority who passes them. But if it's really a budget resolution that you all think is going to become law, really, I mean, is there any member in this room who thinks Governor Dayton and the Senate are going to pass a $2 billion tax cut bill?
I'm going to keep talking to him, Representative Lincheski.
Okay. So at any rate, Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw my amendment, but I hope, you know, the discussion there kind of lays out that, you know, I think we know this budget resolution isn't going to be the law at the end of the day. This is just an opening bid, and it's not going to be enacted, but I will withdraw my amendment.
Representative Lincheski withdraws her amendment. Are there any other amendments? Seeing none, discussion to the resolution as amended. Representative Carlson. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I did at the beginning ask for a roll call on the resolution. I just wanted to remind you that. But I did have a couple of comments before we vote. And I actually, before the tax chair made his most recent comments, was thinking about some of the comments that were made here. And I happen to serve, as you do, on the tax committee. And... I remember the other day that the tax committee chair did emphasize that his goal is to pass a bill that will ultimately be signed into law by the governor. But that brings me to another point. The last few minutes, both Representative Davids and yourself used arguments like being a practical person, being pragmatic. What's in here with a lot of the numbers that you've put out are not going to be signed by the governor. They're not going to make it through the Senate. So I would have to argue that this budget resolution doesn't reflect a very pragmatic approach to resolving in a timely manner the funding of state government and the other entities that do rely on state resources. You have a couple of items in here that the governor may agree with, but by and large, and that's what the amendments that we had here tonight reflected is the governor's budget and trying to move you toward some middle ground. But you appear to be geared toward moving ahead with a budget resolution, setting the targets for those committees to set them up for legislation that will, in the end, not be enacted into law. So the other thing is that I was going to point out, Mr. Chairman, you pointed out that you looked forward to working with us. There wasn't a single amendment adopted here tonight. I think it's fair to say you personally argued against each and every amendment that was proposed. And I've been sitting where you are, and I understand the role of the chair in trying to give your caucus some guidance, but I don't think that the direction that you were moving in tonight does, in fact, reflect a willingness to work with us. We were completely shut out. And there were, you know, quite frankly, a couple of amendments here that were so minor in cost relative to the big picture. You could have adopted them for feel-good purposes, if nothing else, and said, by golly, I am working with you. I did adopt an amendment or two, but that didn't even happen. But we had very serious amendments. We were very concerned about the cuts that you're coming forward with and that the damage that they will do to not only the entities that receive the dollars, but the people of the state of Minnesota. I'm very concerned about the Health and Human Service cut at $1.1 billion and what that's going to mean for people that do rely on our health care system. I'm very concerned about our colleges and universities, the point that was made by Representative Pawlowski very clearly in terms of what the history has been in higher education with tuition going up. You can't hardly pick up the newspaper these days without reading something about the difficulty students are facing with student debt and how that should be handled. So we're not reflecting investing in our people in this bill. We're not reflecting what we should be investing in K-12 education. Representative Murphy clearly pointed that out. Job development. I mentioned earlier with the bonding bill that we really have right now, to a large degree, two economies in Minnesota. The metropolitan area is just absolutely booming, and Greater Minnesota, even though Greater Minnesota perhaps is still doing better than many other states because our overall unemployment rate is low and the number of people working has gone up, but we should be working toward a level playing field so that Greater Minnesota can benefit the same way that the Twin Cities is benefiting. And that was the amendment that was brought forward by Representative Mahoney. You know, I could go back through all of these, but the main point I'm making is that there was no movement toward the middle ground. There was no movement toward providing a situation where many of these bills that your members, your chairs, are going to be working very hard on will, in the end, become law. It just won't happen. And I think Chair Davids has recognized that with his comments in the Tax Committee about having a bill that will ultimately be signed into law. And I hope he achieves that. And I hope that perhaps as this session moves forward that you give some thought. These budget resolutions can be amended. I've amended them several times when I was in the chair. There are some things that you could do as you reflect a bit on what you've done here tonight to position yourself better and your chairs better to getting their bills enacted into law without experiencing the difficulty that you do when you're on a track all by yourself as a body. When you've got the Senate to face and you've got the governor to face and, quite frankly, the people of Minnesota to face. I don't think they're going to buy into this budget. Thank you.
Representative Carlson, I guess let me just say that
You know, first of all, I think everyone here recognizes that no omnibus bill that passes the House, whether it's controlled by the Republicans or the Democrats, or the Senate, whether it's controlled by the Republicans or Democrats, is going to become law in the form that it passes the House or the Senate. There's always a negotiation. There'll be negotiations here. And so I don't think that anyone here believes that we are going forward with the expectation that all the bills that we come forward with are going to pass in the form they leave the House. There will be negotiation. I mean, there will be compromise. There will have to be. We did, as you saw, leave a, I think, significant amount of unallocated money that can be redeployed to different things if we feel it's necessary. And as we move forward here, I know that in some ways, a lot of the work now shifts to the chairs and their committees to put their bills together and, you know, away from the specific work that I've been doing on the budget resolution. But certainly, if anyone from the minority party has places that they think they'd like to spend money or places they think that we can save money or wants to meet with me and talk to me, I certainly invite you to call Shirley Kodrick, Committee Legislative Assistant, set up an appointment or just catch me on the House floor, and I'm glad to talk to any of the members and the majority party members, too. And so, Representative Carlson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I fully recognize I've been on many conference committees, chaired many conference committees, and you do have to bargain and reach compromise, and some of them I've been on have been very contentious. But what I'm concerned about is your beginning point is so far removed from where the Senate is going to come in this week. I'm absolutely convinced they'll have a very different approach. And we clearly know with the governor's budget that you're far removed from anything that the governor is going to be willing to sign. So my point was you're setting your chairs up really for a situation where they're going to have to basically make some tough decisions that will be needless in the end, because their decisions that they'll have to make with these targets are going to be such that they're going to go into conference committee and they're not going to be dealing with the reality of the situation as they try to defend, because that's, remember, the goal, to defend the House position, and it's not going to be defensible in the eyes of the Senate or the governor, and it's just not going to happen. That's my my point. But I do have a question, maybe, Mr. Chairman, before we go to a vote in this. That is, do you have deadlines in place for the chairs to have their bills put together?
Representative Carlson, we do have some deadlines, but I have to confess I don't remember them off the top of my head.
Perhaps, if you don't mind, you could, if you do have the deadlines, email them to the members of this committee and maybe even broader. You know, I'm sure many members of the House would be interested in knowing what those deadlines are, because they do serve on those committees.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that they've been set for every single committee, Representative Carlson, but let me go back and find out where we are with that and talk to leadership. Some of that is really more of you know, a leadership issue than anything that I've particularly set, but I'll see what I can find out.
Thank you.
Representative Lincheski, did you have a question? All right. Well, then, members, seeing no further discussion, I'll renew my motion that Resolution 01, as amended, be adopted.
Yeah.
And there is a roll call vote. The clerk will call the roll.
Not Black.
Aye.
Albright?
Aye.
Anderson?
Aye.
Carlson?
No.
Cornish?
Aye.
Davids?
Yes.
Dean?
Yep.
Detmer?
Aye.
Juraskowski?
Yes.
Garofalo?
Yes.
Gunther?
Yes.
Heckberth?
Aye.
Hamilton?
Yep.
Hillstrom?
No.
Hornstein?
No.
Kahn?
No.
Lincheski?
No.
Liebling?
No.
Noon?
Yes.
Mahoney?
No.
McNamara?
Yes.
Murphy?
No.
Norness?
Yes.
Pulowski?
No.
Poppy?
No.
Torkelson?
Yes.
Erdahl?
Yes.
Wagenius?
No.
I'm trying to help this.
By a vote of 17 ayes and 11 nays, the resolution is adopted. And members, seeing no further questions, thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.